the daily events of your life, the vicissitudes of daily life. You wake up in the morning and you know you have certain things that you have to do by obligation. By the commandments of God, you have certain obligations to do that day. By your state in life, you have certain obligations to do that day. But then God's going to surprise you. All sorts of events are going to happen, okay? You're going to get all sorts of inconveniences, all sorts of unpleasantries. Dealing with this problem, that problem, the other problem, this change, that change, the other change, etc. And how you deal with them in the midst of these vicissitudes, how you live the life of Christian virtue, how you live the militant life of the Christian on earth, has everything to do with how you deal with those situations. God sends you all sorts of curveballs, if I may be permitted to make a rare sports metaphor. This is God's will of good pleasure. The things that He sends you to endure, to suffer, even pleasures, even legitimate pleasures, things that He sends you and how you deal with them and how you live your life virtuously in connection with them. That's God's will of good pleasure. So we have to deal with God's will signified and God's will of good pleasure. Now, God's will signified is clear. It's the commandments, it's the duties of your state in life, whatever that state in life may be. God's will of good pleasure, that's not so easily foreseen. That's going to change. That is the very nature of God's will of good pleasure. But this is how we have to look at providence. We have to look at human history, including our own present, which soon enough will be history, in terms of God's providence. Now, I wrote a piece that I just published today as I'm recording this. It'll be a few days old when this premieres on the Crusade Channel. But I wrote a piece called Learning Difficult Lessons in Catholic Europe. And I'm going to read this and it's very short. I'm going to read it and make some comments along the way. But I'm going to use this as kind of a springboard into the further considerations that I'm going to go into in this show. Again, the piece is called Learning Difficult Lessons in Catholic Europe. It's on Catholicism.org. The juxtaposition of two news stories I read today provides much food for thought. The first piece was, quote, Bishop cancels Nicene Creed to avoid offending non-Catholics, end quote, at Church Militant. The second, quote, Cardinal, Spain faces, quote, true emergency for our future, end quote, end quote, at the Catholic Herald. So the first story, I'm giving you sort of an executive summary from the actual Church Militant article. Quote, Bishop Dario Oliveiro of the Diocese of Pinerolo made the announcement about the omission. This has to do with the Nicene Creed, the omission of the Nicene Creed. Quote, since there are also non-believers, everyone will say it silently. End quote, Olivero told his flock at the Cathedral of St. Donatus in Pinerolo, a town in Piedmont near Turin. So this is northern Italy. Quote, those who believe can say it, and those who don't believe or have other beliefs will silently contemplate the reasons for their beliefs. End quote. A few minutes of embarrassed silence followed the bishop's announcement. Then the Mass resumed as if nothing had happened. La Nuova Bussola Quotidiana is an Italian newspaper. So they quoted, the quotes from here came from an English translation of an Italian newspaper report. So now I responded to this with some words from the Gospel of St. Mark on Twitter. Not that the Gospel of St. Mark's on Twitter, but that was a misplaced modifier. I responded to this on Twitter with words from the Gospel of St. Mark. Quote, for he that shall be ashamed of me and of my words, the Son of Man also will be ashamed of him. Now, of course, this is Twitter, so I have to truncate my words a bit. But the longer quote mentions the Son of Man will be also ashamed of him before my Father and my angels and the angels in heaven. So there's more to it than that. But you can look up the full quote in Mark 8, around, quote, around verse 38, Mark 8:30. In fact, it is the whole verse, Mark 8:38. So this is what Bishop Dario Oliveiro did and said. So Dom Oliveiro, as I will refer to him later, that's how his faithful would know him. Words which came to me later were lex orandi, lex credendi. Of course, that means the law of praying is the law of believing. In light of which, his lordship's deliberate violation of the rubrics is all the more nakedly perfidious, because if the rule of praying is the rule of believing, and he's deliberately omitted the creed, there's something intensely poetic about that. In light of lex orandi, lex credendi, a deliberate omission of the creed. Now, I have to say, the creed is not obligatory in every liturgy in the Roman Rite. We've been going to the Maronite Rite frequently, and I've noticed that they say the creed every day. So it doesn't matter what the rank of the Mass is, apparently. They say the creed every day. Well, in the Roman Rite, you don't. In the Roman Rite, it's only if it has a certain ranking that it's recited. But in the Sunday Masses, it's absolutely requisite that we have the credo. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. And the same thing for major feast days. You know, Christmas, we'd have it. Epiphany, we'd have it. Easter, of course, we'd have it, et cetera, et cetera. And what the cardinal did, what the bishop did, was deliberately omitted on a Sunday, on a day when it was actually obligatory. And this is why he had to make an announcement ahead of, he didn't have to do the whole stupid thing, but this is why, as part of his fiasco, he felt compelled to explain that he was omitting the creed, because in the presence of the congregation were people who weren't Catholics. Well, big deal. This guy's an ecumenical, he's in ecumenical hyperdrive. The church militant story goes on about official dialogues he's had with Muslims and how he's been present at Muslim presentations in Italy and so forth. He seems to rejoice at the fact that Catholic Italy is sort of capitulating to fake religions. So it's all the more nakedly perfidious in light of lex orandi, lex credendi, that the bishop would deliberately omit the reciting of the creed in the Mass when he's obliged by the rubrics, which he has no authority over, by the way, to alter. That awkward silence during which the congregation silently expressed their belief in the God, gods, or lack thereof, of their choice, could not possibly compare to the beautiful silence of the Roman canon of the traditional Latin Mass. The latter is full of meaning. The former is just a void, and an embarrassing one at that. You know, sometimes in the liturgy, or sometimes in great works of art, there's a silence, or there's a white space, or there's a blank, there's an omission that's poignant, okay, that's eloquent, that fits, that says a lot. And sometimes there's a silence, or there's an omission, or there's a lack, or there's a white space that's awkward, that's clunky, that's inexpert, that's derogatory of the beauty of the whole. A great artist knows how to employ silence, for instance, if it's music. A great artist knows how to employ white space if he's, say, a graphic designer or a painter or something. A great artist knows how to use space, and he doesn't have to fill it up with all sorts of busyness. But an amateur, a clown, a buffoon, an idiot, doesn't know how to use these things. So frequently it happens in the new liturgy that somebody wants to do something profound, and he sticks something in that's